whether the blue wave actually happened on November 6th may be a matter of semantics, but Democrats did do very well in picking up more than 30 U.S. House seats in reclaiming a majority in that body. So what were the factors, and how important was President Trump in influencing suburban women to vote for Democrats? The co-hosts of the Pollsters podcast, Kristen Soltis-Anderson and Margie O'Meara, were at ASU last week for a post-election analysis presented by the university's School of Civic and Economic Thought and Leadership. Anderson is the co-founder of Echelon Insights, and O'Meara is a principal at GBA Strategies and a Democratic pollster. I spoke with them and started by asking O'Meara whether the big issue for voters across the country was President Trump, healthcare, immigration, or something else.
Well, I think for a lot of people, it was all of the above, or for some voters, it was one of those things, maybe not all of those things. So I think for a lot of Democratic candidates, the main focus was on health care, for sure. It was important to voters. It transcends party lines. Everyone has to go to the doctor, or has a family member has to go to the doctor, or has health challenges at some point, or is born or goes through these challenges that need care. So it was a very unifying message on the Democratic side to talk about health care. At the same time, for sure, Donald Trump is important to a lot of voters. For one thing, he's the reason that so many women candidates got into the race, who decided to run for office, who marched right after his inauguration. And that energy and enthusiasm and groundswell across the country of people who, some of them first-time candidates, some of them not, decided this is the time where I need to step up. And a lot of that has to do with Donald Trump, for sure.
Yeah, I think this election was one where Democrats had the upper hand on the issue of health care. Republicans had the upper hand on the issue of the economy. I think ultimately it was the strength of the economy and the president's ability to get his base to show up, even when he was not on a ballot in name, that kept the night from being worse for Republicans. But I do think that Republicans need to take a look at what has caused them to lose so badly in the suburbs. If you take a look, people who live in the suburbs in very red states, Oklahoma, Texas, those suburbs voted a lot more like their suburban brothers and sisters in blue states. And I think that's a challenge Republicans need to confront if they want to be competitive in the 2020 election.
Considering we know the midterm malaise that often happens to the party that's in the White House, but the economy is very strong for the most part. And it's one of those things that's usually a slam dunk issue. How many Republicans do you think in certain districts wish that President Trump hadn't come?
So the irony is that many of the candidates who lost are the very same folks that tried to put a little bit of distance between themselves and the president, which of course has led the president to sort of claim victory, that had only these people embraced him, they would have won. I don't think that the causality is there. I think that you had a lot of Republicans who were stuck between a rock and a hard place. They needed that base to turn out, and there's not a great deal of appetite among the Republican base for folks to really aggressively distance themselves from the president. They figure, who needs friends like these? You know, if you've got Democrats already attacking us, why do I want people within my own party doing it? However, I think the ability to be independent from the president is key to assuaging the concerns of those voters who may like how the economy is going, but they don't like the president's tone. They'd like someone to be there to check him. And if you seem like you are too much of a rubber stamp, that was clearly not what I think voters in these midterms were looking for.
There are so many Democratic females who did very well, and Republican females not quite as well. And also to what Kristen said about the suburban voter, how much of that was driven by so-called moderate women?
So women, no question, help decide Democrats' fortunes this election cycle, whether you're talking about candidates or women voters. So it's women voted for Democratic by a 19-point margin. And men voted Republican overall for the House, and yet Democrats won. And that's the first time that that's happened, where women have put Democrats over the edge while men voted Republican. Usually they both vote for the same party, even if there's a gender gap, when Democrats win. So that's new. And that almost exclusively, that margin comes from college-educated women, wherever they may live. So there is for sure something happening here, and it's no surprise. You have a majority of Americans who say the president doesn't respect women. So women make up a majority of the electorate, and a majority of the electorate feel the president doesn't respect them. So that is problematic, especially when you have a lot of candidates on the Republican side unsure whether or not they want to embrace the president fully, or are they more of a check and balance, and they want to stay independent from the president. That's not may not be where their party is, and they may sound inauthentic in the process. And so you see a lot of women who have moved toward the Democratic side. They may not necessarily be moderate. There are enthusiastic progressive women who are running for office who have become activists in their communities, who are fighting for stronger gun laws, who were hosting parties or canvassing for candidates. It's not just about moderate women. Women all across the board who say, I don't feel reflected or represented by the current administration.
Yeah, I think it's important to point out, it's so easy for us in the polling business to slice and dice the electorate every which way and to make generalizations. I mean, I can't tell you the number of times I've talked about, you know, white college-educated women trending toward the Democrats, and then I'll have a white college-educated woman come up to me and say, well, you know, I'm a Republican and I support the president. So, you know, the story is complex, but when you look from a sort of macro level and you look at the patterns that we see in the exit polls, white college-educated women broke evenly for House candidates in the last election. They broke for Hillary Clinton, but at the House level, they were split evenly. Now they are a D plus 20 group. They broke for Democrats by an enormous margin. But they weren't the only group of women that moved. Even white non-college educated women moved from being a very Republican group to a kind of Republican group. You had married women. I will so often hear my fellow Republican consultants talk about, well, you know, we still win married women. Well, we didn't win married women. This was not just about one type of woman who lives one type of lifestyle, living in one type of community. This was women of all walks of life sort of bending away from the Republican Party. And I think it's going to take a new message, but also a lot more Republican female candidates on the ballot for women to choose from. I mean, the great irony of this moment is that we are going to exceed 100 women in this next Congress, and yet the number of Republican women in Congress is shrinking, and dramatically so.
I want to ask you each just one more question to Jeff Flake. So President Trump obviously was very critical of Jeff Flake. That's an example where the Republicans were not able to retain a seat. Democrats ran a really strong candidate who ran a really strong campaign, but she ran it as an independent to some extent. It's not that she didn't talk about being a Democrat, but she really focused on independent. Is that, for both of you, is that a strategy that will work that we might see other Democrats across the country do?
I think any candidate who wants to win would be smart to try to reach out to the middle. Kyrsten Sinema wound up winning, I believe, the highest proportion of Republican voters in her state of any Democrat who was on the ballot statewide running for Senate, with the exception, I believe, of Joe Manchin.
Right. She got 12%.
That's right. So I think that demonstrates that there is limited value in running a strategy that just says, let me run up the numbers with my base as much as possible. There is a political middle that is dissatisfied with both parties, that wants to see things different, that maybe voted for Donald Trump in 2016 because he seemed like he'd be a wrecking ball and would change things, but were maybe less than enthusiastic about the sort of change that he has meant. And I think there are those dissatisfied voters looking for someone who is not just running a campaign of, let me energize my base as much as possible, but is someone who is speaking to those who are not necessarily of the same partisan label.
Yeah, Margie, Kyrsten Sinema ran a great campaign, but she did get some criticism for not being progressive enough.
Well, I mean, she did not just decide to run for Senate as an independent. She has had a long history that she did not sort of shy away from having. I think what's important for a lot of these candidates is to separate out, you know, style and substance. They're not necessarily one and the same. One can be authentic and a moderate. One can be authentic and a progressive or a conservative. They're not, you know, one-for-one correlation there. And also, you know, making sure that you're, you know, being true to yourself in a way that people really can find accessible in a way that people know where you stand and that the things that you say are ultimately going to be backed up by how you vote, which I think was some of the challenges that Flake in particular bumped up against.
Margie O'Meara and Kristen Soltis Anderson are co-hosts of the Pollsters podcast. They were in the Valley last week for post-election analysis at ASU's Tempe campus.